The WorldCoin project is now live. It's on mainnet. The WLD, I guess it's wild? No, world. The world token is in the wild. Orbs are deployed, and the crypto community absolutely hates it. Bankless Nation, it is the last Friday of July. That means it's the last weekly roll-up of July. Well, sad. I spoiled it, but what time is it, David?
Oh, Ryan, it's the Bankless Friday weekly roll-up where we cover the entire weekly news in crypto, which is always an ambitious endeavor, especially this week. This one's going to be a long one, so we're going to try to move fast, yet we persevere into the frontier nonetheless, this time quickly. I have no coffee this time, but I'm sure you do.
Yeah, I always have coffee. Always. Never doubt. Why don't you have coffee? Do they not have coffee in Switzerland?
They do have coffee in Switzerland. I choose to not drink coffee at 6:41 p.m.
It's late where you are, huh?
It is late, yeah.
Tomorrow, you climb in a mountain.
Yes. Climbing Mount Pollux, which is a training mountain, and then we come back and rest, and then we climb Matterhorn the next day.
Jeez, man. Well, yeah. We'll be training.
If I open up these windows behind me, you would see the Matterhorn.
We've got a lot to talk about this week. Mountains aside, we've got a mountain of content to climb here. So number one, WorldCoin just launched, and most people love it, hate it.
Love it. Everyone loved it. Everyone loved the WorldCoin launch. Universally beloved launch. Everyone was so excited for it. Obviously not. We're going to go through the takes of varying degrees of quality. Vitalik, of course, had a rational take. And then there's just a bunch of things to unpack, including the topic of WorldCoin on the Bankless podcast. We were a bit of main characters. I was a bit of a main character this week since you weren't on the episode. So we'll talk about that.
Yeah, you know what they say about main characters, David. We gotta avoid that whenever possible. But we also got a main character crypto bill that's in the House, the House of Representatives, that is. It's actually maybe a good one, so we'll talk about that. Mm-hmm. There's also a bad bill in the Senate, so we'll contrast those two things. David, we gotta also talk about this new X thing. Twitter has become X, and Elon wants to make it the everything app. Does crypto have a story in there? I don't know. I want to get your take on some of the changes that are coming down the pike.
Yeah, it's a complete mess, but I continue to reserve my judgment, but we'll talk about that when we talk about X. Also, it's weird to call it X. It's just not going to stick.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still calling it Twitter. Also, the recession seems to be off. At least that's what Powell is saying. We'll talk about that. And also the phase of the market that we're in. Last week, we gave you permission to be bullish. This week, I feel like it's a phase of the market that starts with an A. We'll get to that in the market section.
But what could that be?
Before we do, though, we got to tell you about our friends and sponsors over at Stater. They are building a liquid staking protocol. David, you want to tell us about it?
Yeah, Stater, it's the new LSD on the block. New LSD just dropped. And we want more LSDs. We want more decentralized staking service providers. The cool thing about Stater is that if you want to run a node with Stater, you only need 4 Ether. It's one of the lowest capital requirements that I've seen around. They have a pledge, of course, to self-cap if that day ever comes that they need to implement that. Permissionless pool of staking node operators. These are the words that we like to hear. So if you want to stake your ETH with Stater and run a node with Stater, there is a link in the show notes. Check it out if it seems right for you. You can also get some SD token issuance on top of your ETH yield if you choose to stake with Stater.
Go check it out. There's a link in the show notes. David, let's get to the market section this week. And we got to start with King Bitcoin over here in the Kraken Pro charge. Thanks to Kraken for allowing us to pull this up. Looking at what are the numbers for Bitcoin this week?
29,800 is where we started. 29,300 is where we ended. Lost $500 on the week. We are down 1.6%, which I call flat. That is flat in crypto.
We call it flat. How about ETH price? Yeah. Same, flat.
1890 to 1870, down 1%, even flatter.
Back in the 1800s, huh? Yeah. All right.
I don't like the 1800s.
I don't like it. It wasn't.
I wasn't alive back then.
we'd rather 1900s and then 2000s, yeah, like, you know, and then we're finally into the future. ETH Bitcoin ratio, is that saying anything on the week?
Up 0.5% to 0.064, just under. Flat. It's flat.
Well, you know where the party is, David.
Elsewhere. It's elsewhere.
Yep. It's not in crypto. It's over in Stockland. So we are viewing the NASDAQ chart here and is creeping even higher towards all-time highs on the week. And this is really interesting to me because you contrast that with what the Fed is saying. Flipping to our Fed watch, the Fed just raised interest rates again this week. and this is the highest level in 22 years. They increased the interest rate by 0.25%. This was sort of expected, to a target range of 5.25% to 5.5%. And the question is, of course, will they raise again in September? Powell said, I would say it's certainly possible that we will raise funds again at a September meeting if the data warranted. And I would also say it's possible that we would choose to hold steady. Anything is possible, is what Powell is saying. His comments on inflation, he said it's moderated since the middle of last year. And that's certainly what seeing in the data. Yes, moderated inflation. CPI is now at 4.8% when you exclude food and energy. I don't know if you should exclude food or energy, but the Fed still seems determined to hit 2% and still says they have a long way to go. But here was the headline news here. Powell also said that the Fed staff is no longer forecasting a recession. No longer forecasting a recession.
Recession's canceled. If it's not being forecasted, it's not happening. That's how recessions work.
How do you take that? I mean, the people who are saying that a recession is imminent, it hasn't hit yet. And now the Fed is saying there's not going to be a recession. A lot of different ways to take this.
Recession is such a nebulous term. All these headlines really just grind my gears.
It's two quarters of negative GDP growth. Like, it has a definition.
Yeah. Yeah, but the GDP measurements are poor. Inflation measurements are poor. Recession is also something that exists in like consumer appetite and consumer confidence. Like, there's so many things that go into what we're actually trying to talk about, which is like, do we have to hunker down, or do we just like check a technical box saying we're in a recession? I was talking to one of my macro friends, and their hot take was that we've been in a recession. We're already in a recession. And just because the numbers that the Fed measures shows that we're not in a recession on a technical level doesn't actually mean anything. It's so qualitative.
It's so interesting though. Why would Powell is coming out fairly strongly in saying that they're no longer forecasting a recession. He's not.
Yeah. Because they want to say we stuck the landing. We threaded the needle. You're welcome. We're the Fed.
But it would be very strange if in a quarter or two he has to eat those words and say, oops, I was wrong again.
But they're the arbiters of recession.
Here's Jim Bianco's take. I know they're not,
but...
Jim Bianco's take. My take on the Fed hike statement and the presser so far, it provided the least amount of information of any meeting since they started hiking in March 2022. Powell's going out of his way to say nothing and not commit to anything.
I hate these games.
But this
now
is
we're
the game
in, not even are we interpreting the words that they say. Now we're interpreting the lack of words.
He also added to this tweet, I spoke too soon, says Jim. This headline just caused risk markets to fall. Powell, Fed staff no longer forecasting recession. This is how upside down we are. This is his comment on the Fed no longer forecasting recession. The Fed no longer sees a recession as thought to be bearish for stocks because it opens the door to more hikes or higher for longer. I've often joked that stocks would make a new high if the economy unemployed enough people. I was trying to be funny, but the market appears to be taking this idea very seriously.
Too seriously.
I don't know what's going on, to be honest, David. So the recession hasn't come yet. That's one data point. Inflation seems to be tamed. Stocks are pumping. Real estate's up. Yes, bonds got a massive haircut. They got, somewhat destroyed. So there's that. Wealth inequality, of course, has continued to increase. So there's that. But it feels like a lot of the macro bears have been incorrect so far. So far. And so some of them are saying, it sounds to you like, well, just you wait. It's coming, right? We just haven't felt the wave hit us. There's been an earthquake in the ocean and there's a tidal wave out in the horizon. It just hasn't hit yet. We're just kind of waiting for it. But I'm kind of wondering at this point, why aren't stocks down? Here's my big question for everyone in macro right now. How is it possible that Fed interest rates have been raised to 20-year highs and yet the stock market is also nearing all-time highs? I was told this couldn't happen, David.
Right. Yeah. That is crazy, actually.
Yeah, a commenter on that tweet said, I never thought it could. 5% inflation would cause a depression scenario is what I thought. Yet here we are and consumers are consuming away regardless. It's kind of unreal, in my opinion. That's kind of the contrast to me, is like the rates have been raised to 20-year highs, and yet risk-on assets, aside from crypto, but risk-on assets are going back to all-time highs. How does that make
sense? Yeah, that's actually nuts. If you told us back in the start of 2022, when like everyone in the crypto industry, including myself, was getting our minds wrapped around interest rates and flows and risk assets, and then halfway through 2022, we're all pummeled, and then we're all gripping the edges of our seats saying, when's the pivot? When's the pivot? And the pivot has not come. I mean, there's been a decrease in acceleration of the raising of interest rates, but there has been no Fed pivot, not even after the Silicon Valley banking crisis. And so after all of that, we still at tech stocks all-time highs. If you told us that like in early 2022, that would have been like, oh yeah, they did thread the needle. They got it right. Look at that.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, and I don't understand what's going on. I guess still my base case, again, what do I know about macro, is that this is some kind of slow motion, excess money printing, inflationary crisis. But it's just happening so slow, like we just don't really know what the effects are. I know I would not want to be in sovereign bonds, that's for sure. I know that wealth inequality is going to increase. I have no idea what inflation is going to do in the future. I have no idea about a recession.
And now I'm like, I'm not sure if it even matters.
That's the thing. I don't know that it matters what Powell does in September. And that's kind of a weird place to be.
I think the markets are saying that. They just have like interest rate fatigue.
I guess that. So at this point, what I do is I just kind of shrug, ignore macro, and just keep buying crypto. Because I still think that in kind of this money printing world.
Even when I wasn't ignoring macro, I was still buying crypto.
I'm going back to ignoring it. Clearly, I don't understand what's going on here. Mm. I think the question is, where are we in the market? And I promised an A word to describe this. I call this the accumulation phase of the market. And we could see it on the chart in front of us right now. This is Bitcoin long-term holder supply. And the number is up. So Bitcoin long-term holders control 75% of the circulating supply now. And this is an all-time high. And this happens at every point in kind of the bear market, particularly at this phase, the accumulation phase, is the long-term holders, they're not selling. They're continuing to buy. They're continuing to pile in, right? Those with conviction are just like not only holding through it, they're actually adding to their stack. This is happening with assets like Bitcoin. This is happening with high conviction assets like Ether. It's happening right now. And so what this means is these are going to be the winners on the other side of this market. Everyone who got scared, everyone who sold low, those are the losers. Everyone who's not accumulating right now, those are going to be the losers on the other side of this market. And it just plays out like this every single time because human psychology has not changed in 200,000 years of our history here.
It's just a natural order of things. Like the short-termers come in, they buy the top, they get shook out, and then people have to sell for the next year due to a collective reasons of, you know, other people losing conviction. They have to sell for taxes. They have to sell for whatever. And then like we run out of sellers and then people start to get okay and comfortable with where the market lands. And then sellers turn into buyers or buyers start buying. Like the resonance between so many of the things we're talking about in the market, like stocks pumping and crypto being in an accumulation phase, that's 2019. I've seen this movie before. That's what we were doing this time 4 years ago. Like the pattern is just happening once again.
And 4 years before 2019, they were doing it like in 2014, 2015, right? It's like, this has happened before. It'll happen again. I think that sometimes people tend to overcomplicate crypto investing, right? They try to focus on like how to win. And what I would say is from like our years in investing in this asset, we can't tell you everything it takes to win, but I know you are going to lose if you're selling your ETH and your Bitcoin, right? Like that's the recipe for losing. I think the people who have done best in crypto, in my experience, I don't know if this applies to you, David, is just the one thing they've done consistently is they've just held.
Yeah.
Like, it's as simple as that.
Let the waves wash around you.
Yeah. You don't even, it's nice if you accumulate.
If whenever one of my trades doesn't work, I just hold it until it does.
Is that true for every trade? I know you bought some.
It's a surprising number of them.
If you have conviction, you hold. That is the rule here. All right. Speaking of different conviction, let's talk about layer twos. So the layer two wars are I've continued they're to
They're the hottest they've ever been. They're so spicy right now.
This was something that happened this week. Optimism flipped Arbitrum in terms of daily transactions. That's the red line
the here. The first time that's ever happened.
Yeah, flipping the blue line. And so that is a new event in the layer two wars. It doesn't mean Arbitrum's out, though. Arbitrum still has 57% of all of the layer two assets all inside TVL. Of Arbitrum yeah. One. Optimism has 27%. And I know we said this a long time ago, but I want to double down on this. Layer two beat, this is where we're looking at all of these stats. This really is like the default DeFi pulse of like, 2019 and 2020. Remember DeFi Pulse? Yeah. We're just constantly like hitting the refresh button. Like DeFi's getting bigger. You know, it's at $200 million now. Oh, it just crossed $1 billion now. I'm doing the same like thing
all
with
L2P. 20 right of now. Us that were bullish on DeFi when we first learned about the word, we're all like using this as like validation. It was our validation website. Now this is our layer two thesis validation website.
Well, look, we've got now $10 billion in layer two. So that's about the highest it's ever been. From an activity perspective, we can plot the activity. And this line looks like it's going up. So you could see—
God, that is a great chart.
Right? Look at the blue line right here, which is Ethereum. It's kind of holding steady, right? Because
Ethereum transactions. Ethereum
transactions. Actions. This is an activity.
It's already maxed out. It's been
it's already maxed out. So it's not getting any higher, but look at layer two. Look at it rise.
It's just, and like, dude, that is the calm before the storm phase of that line.
We're not even in the bull run.
That line is going to increase in, incline. That good thing is going to get steeper exponentially.
Yeah. Yeah. There's
God, remember when our scaling factor was like 1.5? Now we're at 4.5.
Yeah. I mean, I think what we're seeing on this chart is basically like optimistic rollups, which were released like, 2 years. They have a 2-year head start from ZK rollups. We haven't even seen ZK rollups kind of enter here. And
ZK thing's almost at $500 million, bro. That's not a small amount.
$500 million. 1/20th. It's still 4%, right? So in order for ZK to catch up, it has to just not only like win, but like it has to outpace what the optimistic rollups are doing. Anyway, this is why the wars are so fun. And this is why I keep hitting refresh on layer two beat and looking at all these charts, but it's very good news for scaling Ethereum and for the modular blockchain thesis. One thing I would like to see, I will say, is this column right here in terms of the stage of decentralization. Our best is stage one, which is still training wheels on sequencers.
Yeah. And they're still technically young, yes.
Yes. So Arbitrum is at stage one. Optimism is still at stage zero. I would like to see the zeros become ones. I would like to see the ones become twos. That will make me feel a lot better.
We would like the slices. The slices all turn green. All those little different colored slices. We want those to turn green.
That's right. Want that too. All right. Well, David, we got a lot coming up next. What are we covering?
Yep. WorldCoin launches and everyone loves it and cheered. And then after that, we have a good bill and a bad bill. Bad bill's in the Senate, good bill in the House, just passed the financial committee vote. Jake Stravinsky's got a take where he calls the vote a historic day for crypto policy. And then after that, Optimism drops the law of chains. Laws? We're getting laws? Yeah, we're getting laws. I'm super stoked about it. So all of that and more. But first, I want to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make the shows possible, especially Kraken, a preferred crypto exchange for 2023. If you are accumulating crypto, like we said that you ought to be, perhaps, and not financial advice in the beginning of this show, perhaps use Kraken to get that done. There's a link in the show notes to get started accumulating. Let's go hear from them right now. Kraken Pro has easily become the best crypto trading platform in the industry. The place I use to check the charts and the crypto prices, even when I'm not looking to place a trade. On Kraken Pro, you'll have access to advanced charting tools, real-time market data, and lightning-fast trade execution, all inside their spiffy new modular interface. Kraken's new customizable modular layout lets you tailor your trading experience to suit your needs. Pick and choose your favorite modules and place them anywhere you want in your screen. With Kraken Pro, you have that power. Whether you are a seasoned pro or just starting out, join thousands of traders who trust Kraken Pro for their crypto trading needs. Visit pro.kraken.com to get started today. Introducing Polygon 2.0, the value layer for the internet. For too long, the limitations of blockchains have held back app development and stifled user adoption. The internet allows anyone to create and exchange information. What's missing is a value layer that lets anyone exchange, store, and program value. That's where Polygon 2.0 comes in. Polygon Labs has unveiled a series of innovations that will radically alter the Polygon ecosystem and Web3 as a whole. By leveraging groundbreaking ZK innovations, such as Polygon ZK EVM, the next iteration of the best best-in-class Plonky 2 proving system, and a first-of-its-kind ZK-powered interoperability layer, Polygon 2.0 will give users and devs unlimited scalability and unified liquidity. Right now, there is a Polygon improvement proposal regarding a potential ZK-powered upgrade of Polygon Proof-of-Stake. If approved, Polygon Proof-of-Stake would become a Layer 2 ZK-EVM Validium. So make your voice heard on this proposal by joining the Polygon Discord today. You have a chance to help the Polygon community give the internet the value layer it deserves.
The WorldCoin project is now live. It's on mainnet. The WLD, I guess it's wild? No, world. The world token world is in the wild. Orbs are deployed, and the crypto community absolutely hates it. David, they don't love it. They hate this. They really hate this.
It's the least favorite thing that they've ever seen.
We're going to talk about all of that. First, I want to show you this. So Sam Altman tweeted this out. This is a picture, he says. I'll read the caption in a second, but you see this line kind of forming. I don't know where this is. It looks like possibly somewhere in Japan. This massive line has formed. And the caption from Sam Altman is, day three of WorldCoin launch, crazy lines around the world, one person getting verified every 8 seconds now. David, there is one person.
Okay, so why are people scanning their eyeballs? Because you get, if I understand it correctly, you get 25 world for just doing it, and then 1 world a week then from the rest of time. WorldCoin is $2 right now. So people are waiting in line for $50. What's going on? Why are people doing that?
$50 right now, but like I guess number could go up. And Sam calls one person every 8 seconds.
I don't think number's going to go up at this valuation.
I mean, we'll talk about more of that. But can you, before we get into that, can you just describe what is WorldCoin for people who've kind of missed what this launch actually is and even what this project is?
Okay, so WorldCoin is an attempt at a proof of humanity system that uses biometric scanning. So there is a bunch of different mechanisms that one could approach to try and produce a system that proves unique humanness. So this is an anti-Sybil platform. We've had a number of these come into the crypto world with varying success. Circles from Martin Koppelman is one. Bright ID is one. There's a few others. Gitcoin uses a collection of them. This one is unique in that it attempts, those are the ones I just listed are like circles of trust, as in like other humans verifying other humans. This one is different in that it is biometric scanning, which is another way to prove unique humanness that also gives people the heebie-jeebies. And so there's three parts of the WorldCoin system. There is World ID, which is what you get after you scan your eyeball. There is the orb, which is what we're looking at on screen here, which is this device produced by WorldCoin, which also has aspirations to be able to be produced by any manufacturer that actually does the eyeball scanning and attestation that that eyeball is the same eyeball that is already scanned prior. There is the World Token, the WorldCoin, which is the coin that comes with this network. There also is the World Layer 2, which is an OP stack Layer 2 that got released not too long ago. There is also an app, but I think that's also the World ID. It's like this web, this mobile app that is your attestation for wherever you go on the internet saying, hey, I'm a real human. So you could imagine it like sign in with Facebook, sign in with Google, sign in with Twitter, sign in with WorldCoin, except that mechanism would be kind of cool because the sign in with WorldCoin button would be a provable human. At least that's the idea. And then also the WorldCoin aspect of this is also supposed to be some UBI attempt. So every human gets an equal amount of world coins distributed to them to their unique eyeball. Their unique eyeball, yeah. And so in addition to all of the proof of humanness, it is also an attempt at fairly distributing a token equally across all humans across the whole entire world. And that's how I would summarize this.
And Sam Altman's part of his reason for this is like AI is going to take all the human beings' jobs, basically. And so we need to know who all the humans are so we can give them some form of UBI, basically. Mm-hmm. Right. And, not have just the robots kind of rule the planet and accrue all of the capital. That is his stated vision for this. And Sam Altman is one of the founders of this, actually. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the project,
he's the guy that found Alex Blania, the CEO. Sam Altman found Alex Blania. He was like, yo, drop out of school and help me build this WorldCoin thing.
Cause
I'm busy
building
OpenAI.
He's the vision guy. Let's talk about, so this went to mainnet. It had been in some sort of alpha version. It wasn't live. Yep. people were being orbed, but in kind of limited capacities. But now it's live. Now it's everywhere. This is the WorldCoin coin itself. So market cap right now, fully diluted valuation of $21 billion. I didn't realize it was so high.
That is nuts.
WLD token trading at $2.15 at this point in time. But a massive amount of the supply is like locked up. The circulating supply is just like a small, it's like 1%.
It's 1%.
1%. Yeah. So the actual market cap in terms of circulating market cap is $239 million, but fully diluted, it's $21 billion, which is an absolutely insane valuation. I mean, well, what does that, I guess, like if you go to coin,
$21 billion, if it puts it at right above Lido staked Ether and right below USDC coming in, it would be number seven. It would bump Lido out.
It would be number seven.
Lido staked ETH. Yeah, it would be number seven.
Wow. In terms of fully diluted market cap, huh?
Extremely, extremely inflated. That is one of the most inflated token launches that I have ever seen.
This is not a layer one, we should say. This is sort of deployed on Optimism chain, right? It's like kind of a roll up.
I think that's right. It is on Optimism mainnet and it has aspirations and it will eventually become its own OP stack chain. Okay. One other thing that I didn't mention about the whole iris scanning thing is that they also say that they preserve your privacy by doing a ZK snark. So they're not creating a database of just like, here's Ryan Sean Adams, here's Ryan Sean Adams eyeball. They're claiming to ZK snark that and to maintain privacy.
Claiming is a key word here, I think. So let's talk about the community reaction here. I thought one of the most rational takes, as usual, is from Vitalik, and he wrote an entire post about biometric proof of personhood that really focuses in on WorldCoin. What's kind of your summary of Vitalik's post here, David?
I think this isn't a direct summary, but I think my takeaway from this is that Vitalik goes through all of these different components of what makes a biometric proof of personhood system. And then kind of explains, well, this is how this works and this is how it leaks. And this is how this works and this is how this is vulnerable. And this is how this works and this is how this is vulnerable. So you get to the end of this thing, I'm like, there's a lot of like things that really need to go right for the system to work. And so he just kind of talked about every single aspect of it and talked about the ways that it's vulnerable. And after you get to the end and you're kind of like, well, that was a lot of things. And so that's why in the intro to the Bankless podcast episode that I did with Sam and Alex, I called it like one of the most ambitious crypto projects, and people did not like that phrasing, but I didn't serve that up very well. I mean, it's like, it has to do so much to work, and it's the scale and scope of the thing is massive and the requirements of getting this thing right are huge. That's what I meant by ambitious.
Yeah, it has to get a lot of things right in order for this to actually be a public good for the world, if it even can be a public good. Yeah, this whole post from Vitalik, I can't recommend it enough. If you have, you know, it's probably 20 to 30 minutes of time to actually read through it. But Vitalik starts you'll learn a lot. He starts by talking about why a decentralized proof of personhood solution is even necessary. Why do we need the idea of decentralized people? Mm-hmm. Why do we need to know whether an Ethereum address is represented by one single person or many people or a bot? The reasons he give is that it's an anti-concentration of power sort of thing. If we want to do like a vote in a DAO and specify that as one person, one vote, if we want to do an airdrop and ignore all the bots, ignore all of kind of the, you know, the Sybil attacks and all of the airdrop farmers who are creating multiple accounts and just distribute it to individual people, if we want to do some sort of credit system, like an on off-chain credit type system for individual human beings, we need some sort of proof of personhood. So that is a good thing in itself if we can somehow manage that on-chain. But then he walks through this one specific implementation of proof of personhood, which WorldCoin is pursuing, which is biometric proof of personhood. And the exact implementation WorldCoin is pursuing is eyeball-based biometric proof of personhood, which presents its own problems. But this this kind of table at the end of his post, I think, sums it up. If you want decentralized proof of personhood, you kind of have two tries at this. One is a hardware biometric-based proof of personhood, and ideally it would be a specialized version of that. You can get privacy fairly high, he says, accessibility and scalability medium, robustness of decentralization, it's fairly low because there's hardware, supply chain issues, all sorts of reasons why. Security against fake people, medium. That's what WorldCoin is pursuing. And then your other option to do this is a social graph-based proof of personhood, where your privacy is kind of low because you have to trust a circle of other human beings to really validate you and verify your mm-hmm. personhood. Accessibility and scalability has been fairly low. Like, these solutions haven't really taken off yet, which is kind of the concern, even though they exist. The decentralization, though, is very high because it's bottom up. And the security against fake people is also high. So he kind of contrasts all of these things and presents the world as a series of engineering trade-offs. I think one of the takeaways for me from this post is that we shouldn't put all of our eggs in one basket. This is a classic Vitalik take, that probably
the best solution is
a blend of all of the above that we kind of amalgamate together into like the
which is actually what Gitcoin uses in order to achieve unique humanness on their platform. They don't behoove themselves to one platform. They just use an amalgamation of a bunch.
We should get into some of the other controversy here because, as you said earlier, David, the crypto community mm-hmm. actually did not like WorldCoin. It was not received with excitement. And I would kind of classify the critiques in a few various forms. One is critiques of WorldCoin themselves and the implementation approach that they're taking. And the other is a critique of biometric proof of personhood altogether. And then some people actually don't like the idea of on-chain proof of personhood at all. Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll take the first one, which is like, WorldCoin sucks. This is This is Lefteris. What is he saying here, David?
Yeah, Lefteris says just a list of bullet points of criticisms about WorldCoin and goes, 20% of the supply of World goes to team and investors. There are privacy concerns about the actual cryptography that protects people's eyeballs. There's malicious orb operators. And so the idea with this orb is that the people operating these orbs aren't necessarily WorldCoin employees. It's the public. The public can operate. A public person can operate an orb, but then that means that one public person can try to manipulate the orb in order to scan other people's eyeballs and take their WorldCoin on their behalf. So that's it. That's issues. You can also tinker with the orb. So that's his next one: malicious/compromised orbs, bribing poor people with tokens for an eyeball scan, and then his last one, which is kind of just like the vibe of the whole thing. It just feels really dystopian.
I mean,
it's called WorldCoin. It's got a chrome orb that you stick your eyeball into. One of the founders is the guy making AI after Bankless. We just did a bunch of like AI doom episodes. Like, it's the whole thing is just like a perfect storm of dystopia.
Yeah, dystopian feeling. Here's a more specific take list of issues from Zach XBT. My issues with WorldCoin. He says, most alarming to me is how the WorldCoin team has boasted about how many users they have, when in reality, they have been exploiting people in developing countries. This is sourcing an MIT Technology Review article from 2022 about that. Verification that you're a real person seems to only be currently enforced at the enrollment level. And so what this has led to is the emergence of a black market for accounts. So you can buy a WorldCoin account on Telegram for a dollar per WorldCoin account. It's being attacked in that way. And then some criticism about the token allocation. There are a few more. So this is under the category of like, WorldCoin sucks. And so you can find a lot of critiques for that, including another one from Andrea M. Bailey. WorldCoin is still stupid and bad in 4 points. Number one, the team incredibly was not prepared for people to sell credentials. That's the issue I was just mentioning. It doesn't solve the one problem it was supposed to solve. There's also some criticism about the foundation that WorldCoin, the kind of the org structure they're creating.
That comes with the territory. Everyone complains about the foundation of every project.
Giving insiders 20% tokens. So it's that kind of thing. So one category of critiques is just about WorldCoin and how it's implemented and how it's being done itself. But going back to those circles, another category is basically broader than just WorldCoin sucks, that critique. It's a category of all biometric proof of personhood sucks. Like, we should never use biometric proof of personhood at all. And going down that path will lead to dystopian outcomes.
Yeah, I was talking to one of my friends, Scott Lewis. He gave me a take that I'd like to read out, actually. He goes, basically, every futurist thinking on biometric scanning has concluded that biometric scanning is absolutely oppressive technology, and there has been a dedicated effort to tell stories where the use of biometric scanning was used by oppressors. not everyone in the world needs to become a domain expert on exactly why biometric scanning is consensus scary technology in the eyes of generations of science fiction writers to understand that there is a consensus that this stuff should not be effed with. Reality land, current governments are the arbiters of who a person is. In many, but not all, governmental systems, if the initial read of the government seems incorrect to you, you have a clear schedule of codified rights and options to appeal and correct that decision. Replacing that oracle with a profit-maximizing corporation composed of Sam Altman cronies who offer zero recourse is much worse. We have a good track record of corporations in similar positions offering no effective recourse to their customers when they are deplatformed. WorldCoin would be in a position to deplatform someone from the literal claim on being a human. Dystopian isn't a feeling in a situation like that. It's inevitable, which I thought was a good analysis of the whole context. Because like, there's a very specific like critiques of WorldCoin about specific implementations. And then like, there's the broad sweeping strokes of like, the whole vibe is just illegitimate. And people
just
are going
have to trust the vibe
across the like, spectrum.
Like serializing yeah. people in this way hasn't worked out well.
Yeah, don't serialize people. Yeah.
Don't serialize people. I mean, one pushback against that take before we get into it though is like, aren't we already being serialized in, you know, so many ways?
Yeah.
I'm just like every time
this time we have cryptography. So like you get to serialize people and then ZK snark it.
I think
that's a valid take.
I think our tech companies are already doing that. Every time I stare down at my iPhone to unlock it, right? It's like doing facial recognition, biometric recognition of my face, and it's unlocking it.
You know, if you don't look at the camera, it won't unlock. It needs your eyes to look at the camera on your iPhone.
Well, you even look at, kind of Apple's new VR goggles, right? That's just directly iris unlock, iris scanning unlock, right? And I'm...
Yeah, there's like eight cameras
This is such a messed up position to be. It's like, I'm excited about that product. And like, maybe I shouldn't be. Maybe I should be fearful of that product. That's another criticism. It's just like biometric proof of personhood descends into all sorts of like corporate dystopianism. There's another critique, I think, which is a good critique and worthwhile. And that's we already have better decentralized proof of personhood protocols. So Circle, Bright ID, Gitcoin, Passport, Proof of Humanity. These are social graph based. You kind of build a web of trust, right? So I know you, David, so I'm willing to like vouch for you and at you're a real human being because we've met in person. So I'll vouch for you and you know someone else, you'll vouch for that person. You kind of build from the bottom up this social graph based approach. I think that's totally valid. And I love those approaches, by the way. And we've talked about them on Bankless several times. My challenge with those is they just haven't scaled yet, right? Like we don't have hundreds of thousands or millions of users on these things. And I'm worried that they just might not scale. Maybe we can crack the code here, and I'm still optimistic, but that's kind of the worry. But here's my takeaway after this episode. What cypherpunks seem to think about on-chain personhood. First of all, our current state is the nation, right? So we all have passports, and the nation can go bad depending on your government. So if your government goes evil or authoritarian, right, you know, nation-state serialization is going to go bad for you. The second method is biometric. And the criticism I think many in the crypto community say is that, well, anything biometric becomes a corporate evil because you need hardware to go collect all of the irises, and that ends up being owned by some evil corporation. Maybe WorldCoin is sort of one of those. And so it always descends, it's flawed, and can often, maybe always, descend into a corporate evil. And then number three, social graph. That's still decentralized, and that really remains our best shot. And I'm sympathetic towards that. I worry that number three is not scalable. But there's also, David, a whole bunch of people who think we don't need on-chain personhood at all, which was interesting to actually consider. This was from...
I think that one's a cop-out.
Well, this is from Nick. Before you dismiss it, this is from Nick from ENS. He says, unpopular opinion, truly decentralized, trustless, civil resistance, or proof of humanity is impossible. You know, he's not saying that like it would be great if we could do it. He's saying you can't do it. So
it's theoretically impossible. Yeah.
Yeah. He says we should stop trying to make it work and instead focus on building systems that don't assume individuals are unique humans. So he's like, mission impossible. You can't even do it anyway. So stop trying. We don't need it. We can rethink our systems beyond this. So that, I think, is a summary of the crypto community's reaction to all of this and all of the criticism. I want to turn towards something else, though, because there was also some criticism of Bankless. Like, why did Bankless decide to have WorldCoin on? What do you want to say about that?
Well, it has a ton of attention. And so that if people's attention go there, then my attention goes there. Also, there's obviously the poll of like Sam Altman. And then there's obviously also the poll of Sam Altman on Bankless. Like, that's just kind of cool. I will say you weren't there on that episode because it was Mother's Day. It was like a Sunday. And so I was taking it while I was in the middle of Zuzalu. Why did we have WorldCoin on? Well, it's a huge project. It's a massive project. There's only so many proof of personhood projects out there. And this is the only one going after the biometric sector. So like, just as a understanding the scope of like the crypto rabbit hole, the biometric proof of personhood is a part of the crypto rabbit hole. It's a part of like the things you can explore. So I considered it a legitimate place of exploration. And then there was like also criticisms of like the way that I managed that interview, which is I didn't really push back on anything. I didn't really have like any critiques for them. I kind of just let them walk through the project and explain themselves and say, here's what this does and here's how that works. And this is a WorldCoin project. I'm like, great, thanks for coming. Granted, I only had 60 minutes. There was a hard stop. And so that is a extreme constraint on my ability to be thorough. And also the other half of my ability to be thorough is like some of the tech stack behind the hardware and the zero knowledge cryptography that keeps things private. I don't have the skill set to vet that. And so I have to just kind of run on trust and faith of people who actually can be more technical than me. And so my intention of the WorldCoin episode was, hey, crypto universe, hey, Bankless Nation, here's the WorldCoin project. Here's an episode with Sam Altman. Discuss amongst yourselves. And then I get back to like, Bankless, why the F did you host this these people? Why did you not talk about like the dystopian nature of this? Why did you like tee it up in the intro as like one of crypto's most ambitious projects? And I'm like, I guess I got the vibe wrong. I could have been more critical. I could have pushed back more. But at the end of the day, it's just like, I'm also feeling like I'm caught in the middle of, Bankless, you're so opinionated. Why didn't you have an opinion on this one? Like, yeah. You're so opinionated about Ether. You're so opinionated about layer twos. Why didn't you have an opinion on WorldCoin? At the end of the day, it's like sometimes I'm in a particular state, a disposition, a mood. I don't have the mental like capacity to be mean to Sam Altman and a guy who I don't really know who he is. I don't know. I'm asking for forgiveness.
I appreciate that. I think that we could have wrapped that episode a little bit differently, but I think what some people don't understand if they just hear that episode, maybe didn't catch the debrief or don't understand the wider context of what we do is like episode one is kind of like about WorldCoin is kind of a conversation starter. It doesn't stop at the first episode we freaking do on WorldCoin. All right.
We're going to do like canonical.
the WorldCoin panel of all of the critics about WorldCoin. We're going to do the episode with all of the decentralized web of trust alternatives to WorldCoin. We're going to do an episode of the pros and the cons. We're going to see how this whole project turns out. So, that's another element to it.
And then there was also the critique that's like, oh yeah, Sam Altman and WorldCoin paid Bankless to co on the podcast. And I've said this, you've said this.
Well, 10,000 times
and we'll say 10,000. I take offense to that one. That one, they need to apologize for that one. Bankless has never and will never ever take money for content. That's never happened on the newsletter.
We have no investment interest. We have no investment interest.
There's no other investors of Bankless. We're beholden to no one.
People can make up anything on the internet. Anyway, this was kind of a deeper take too. This is a DeFi cheetah saying, I thought the alternative to WorldCoin was Bankless. Basically the implication of like, why do we even need a WorldCoin? Like, I thought you guys were Bankless. And I just wanted to push back on that and support the idea of decentralized identity, decentralized proof of personhood. Yeah. So guys, just so you understand, Bankless is an alternative to banks. But today, nation states provide our core identity. So you get your passport.
They are the arbiters of identity.
Yeah, they are the AML KYC. It's a passport. It's a license. Yeah. Banks don't do that. Stateless is the alternative to states. And if we want to do cool things like one person, one vote or on-chain credit without relying on the state to need to know who humans are, then we need some sort of decentralized identity. Okay. WorldCoin is building a protocol to tell who the humans are without the state. All right. I don't know if this is going to work out well or if it's going to be bad. But I just saw a lot of anger this week on crypto Twitter about this, and some of it is totally warranted. Some of the takes that we just read were completely warranted. Some of it is really uninformed. And my encouragement is basically to channel some of that anger into building. Like, if we don't like what WorldCoin is building, once we pop the hood and look at it, let's build another alternative, because that's what we do at crypto. I mean, we're crypto and we build. So that's my encouragement. Let's not give up on decentralized proof of personhood in general. And so I guess my take on all of this, David, after listening to the conversation that you had with Sam Altman and WorldCoin, is like, I'm still undecided about WorldCoin as a technology. I'm cautious. I'm open to it, because I hate that AML, KYC, and state identity is the only way forward for, you know, some of these use cases. I see decentralized personhood, proof of personhood, as an unlock, and maybe we can do it, maybe we can't. Maybe biometrics is a really bad way to do it, maybe it's not. I'm kind of taking a wait and see approach. I'm not, at this point, willing to get orbed myself, all right? So if that gets you my statement of faith about the WorldCoin project, I wouldn't do it. There's not enough value for me. I'm kind of like, I haven't heard enough compelling reasons why. And I'm not supportive of WLD tokens. I have no comment about that. I have no idea what the value of WLD might be, but it's $21 billion, guys. So just go think about that.
Yeah.
What I care about most is the conversation about this that we're having as a community. I think that's important. And I think that's been opened up in a positive way. And also competition. I just emphasized, if we don't like what WorldCoin is doing, let's build a better decentralized alternative.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my take on things.
Yeah. On the whole WorldCoin token question, we have a question from The Nation. Kyle Kaplan from the Bankless Nation Discord. How does WorldCoin token plan on accruing any value? UBI sounds nice and all, but we all know you just can't print money out of nowhere. I think it's a huge question about WorldCoin. Why the F is this thing 21 billion? Is that what it is? 21 billion when it only ever gets issued. Like, the only bull case I can articulate for the WorldCoin token is that the humans deem the distribution of WorldCoin so incredibly legitimate and fair that they want to be a part of that very fair network.
It's competing as a money, isn't it? In the same way Bitcoin, Ether, and the US dollar, and
maybe
gold is.
I don't even know if it's doing that. I don't even.
But that's
like,
the only
even
value
if they
it can have.
I don't even know if they, like Alex Blania from WorldCoin, has a statement about what he thinks about the WorldCoin asset. He probably can't say it because he's the issuer of it. But like, that's a very dubious value accrual. It's just legitimacy in of itself. Plus, when you see Telegram Snapchat screenshots of people selling, hey, I'll sell you a WorldCoin account for $1, like, that very much erodes that value proposition. Like, there's other like theses about it. Like, it's a graph for just because it's fair. Like, I don't see the value accrual.
Yeah, neither do I. I still do think it's competing in the monetary value category, right? And it has to.
Yeah.
I just don't think it has a good shot at that. But like, it's not producing transaction fees. It's not a cash flowing asset. Right. So meme value money. But the question from Kyle is interesting. It's like, UBI sounds nice, but we all know you can't just print money out of nowhere. I'm like, yeah, but isn't that what Bitcoin and Ether did? You know what I mean? Like, if you can get a meme bootstrapped and kickstarted and enough people believe in a money, in the story,
they can solve the problem later.
Yeah, you can solve the problem now. I don't think that's the path that WorldCoin is on, but I'm saying that if there is a path to it being worth billions of dollars, my take is the path is going to be a bunch of people believe it's a monetary instrument and it's used as a monetary instrument.
I'm so bearish on that. I'm so bearish. Because then it competes right next to Bitcoin and Ether. Like, it's not going to survive that fight.
Bankless Nation, you can make your own decision on WorldCoin. If you haven't caught David's conversation with Sam Altman and Alex from WorldCoin, then go ahead and catch it. There's a link in the show notes, and also it should be in your RSS player. David, enough about WorldCoin. Let's do a good bill, bad bill. There's some good news in Congress for crypto, at least the U.S. Congress. So this bill hasn't passed, but it's a set of bills that are very positive for crypto, and they were just voted on by the House Financial Services Committee, and they passed that vote, which is a pretty big deal, apparently. Jake Chervinsky calls this vote a historic day for crypto policy. There's two bills that are wrapped up in this in the House that are pretty crypto positive. The first is called the Financial Innovation and Technology for the 21st Century Act. So this is a framework for issuance and trading of digital assets at the SEC and CFTC. You know, that whole clarity of like what's a commodity and what's a security. This bill directly addresses that. So we actually get some clarity here. The thing that Gary Gensler never gave us. That's what the FIT is doing for us. Mm-hmm. And that's part one. Part two, David, is the Blockchain Regulatory Certainty Act. It clarifies that non-custodial blockchain developers and service providers, this would be like miners, validators, if you're an at-home validator, wallet providers, that they never custody consumer funds and don't have to register as money transmitters. You know the nightmare scenario of you run your own solo validator?
Yeah, that was that's like the earliest bill that came in that like deemed that, hey, if you're part of a, if you run a node, you process a transaction, there will have to be a money service. That was the very first like crypto like fire alarm that we had.
Oh my God, it would be so scary. It would basically mean that it's kind of illegal without being registered to be a validator in the US. Yeah, the good news here is that this is bipartisan. So 35 members voted for it versus 16, 35 to 15 it won. And 25% of those 35 were actually Democrats. So some bipartisan support that we haven't seen. Tom Emmer, of course, led it. I want to play you this quote from Richie Torres. He's on the Democrat side, and he was weighing in on comments for it. Here it goes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just offer a few thoughts. I mean, there are profound philosophical differences on the subject of crypto, and there's almost no point in relitigating those differences because it's been extensively debated here today. But I find myself unpersuaded by the notion that the status quo is working. You know, a status quo that gave us the largest crypto Ponzi scheme in history is not working. It's by definition failing. My assessment is that the status quo is dangerously deregulated and requires regulation. Albert Einstein said, if we do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result, that's the definition of insanity. And the time has come for us to break the cycle of insanity that governs the application of securities law to digital assets. Now, there's a difference between securities law as we as individuals might think it ought to be interpreted and securities law as it has been interpreted by the courts. And the Southern District of New York has held.
Yeah, I really like Richie Torres. That guy's great.
Yeah.
Big fan.
Great comments there. And the one thing we wanted Congress to do is to provide clarity. And that's what this bill is doing. So Tom Emmer is going to be one of the architects of this bill. I think the next time we catch him, we'll probably be at the permissionless conference. It's happening in September. Yep. We're throwing that conference with Blockworks. That's the 11th through the 13th. Yep. This is going to be a topic of discussion with Tom Emmer.
Yep.
For sure. Mm-hmm. David, we got a bad bill though too, and it's coming from the Senate. You ready for that one?
No.
It's sad. In contrast to that, the Senate is proposing a bill. I'm going to read you the title here. It's called the Crypto Asset National Security Enhancement Act of 2023. Did you catch that?
I don't like those words. National Security Enhancement Act. Yes. I don't give a F what's in that. I don't like it.
Yes. You know it's going to sound a little Orwellian when it has national security and crypto asset in it.
Enhancement Act.
This one is also bipartisan, but only, unfortunately, it's bipartisan. Again, this is coming from the Senate. But basically, it mandates that DeFi protocols and anyone who controls them or makes them available have to impose bank-like surveillance for their users. Mm. So that would mean DeFi controllers, right, need to vet and collect information on their customers, have to do the AML thing, have to report suspicious activity to the government, have to block sanctioned individual users from their protocols. Do you remember the stuff that SBF was advocating like a year ago in some of the crypto legislation that he was like proposing, being like, you know, I think all DeFi protocols interfaces, app user interfaces should have AML, KYC, and complete state surveillance and are basically money transmitter banks. Yeah, it's a lot of that. Bill Hughes from Consensus has some takes. He said, this thing is a doozy. He says, in summary, it deems that digital asset protocols, defined really as any software deployed on chain, is controlled by backers. And the backers are those who develop or retain meaningful control over the protocols, and transaction facilitators who develop and make available applications that facilitate use of the protocols. Basically, what this means is that any US originating or residing person or an entity who invests more than $25 million in building a protocol or owns that much or more in the governance token, if you even just own the governance token. Okay. Anyone who develops and offers the front end of the users or owns the governance tokens would deem to be in control of the protocol for sanctions and AML purposes.
National security enhancement. Get the F out of here. They're just like saying every user of crypto, get the F out of the way. We need to catch North Korea.
Basically. And for entrepreneurs or those investing in kind of like, you know, governance protocols or those building interfaces on top of protocols that, you know, some bad actor might use, they would be part of the responsibility tree here. So Bill concludes this by saying, if this legislation goes through, bye-bye permissionless global computing, at least as the US is concerned. Really bad news. And I think, David, this right here is like Gensler is kind of a sideshow compared to this. Mm-hmm. To me, you know, when crypto talks about the final boss, this right here, national security is the final boss. Yeah. If crypto dies in the US, it'll be to protect us from terrorists and bad guys. And that's why this bill is kind of worrying coming from the Senate side of things. Anyway, we got good news and bad news this week.
This one and just hope that for the best.
Yeah. Well, you know, we got some good news coming up in the next section. What are we talking about, David?
Coming up next, Optimism drops the law of chains. I'll walk you through all of what that means. And CoinDesk is being sold to my first boss in crypto. I'll talk to you about that. Chainlink launches the CCIP protocol, all of these things and more. But first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially MetaMask Portfolio. You already have a MetaMask account, so your MetaMask portfolio is waiting for you. There is a link in the show notes to open up your portfolio with MetaMask. Let's go hear from them right now. Are you a MetaMask user? Well, you're listening to Bankless, so of course you are. The wallet you know and love just got a whole lot better. MetaMask Portfolio is the ultimate one-stop shop for all of your crypto needs. It gives you a holistic view of your crypto portfolio across multiple chains and multiple addresses all at once. You can easily view and manage all your coins, tokens, and NFTs in one convenient place just by connecting your wallet. MetaMask Portfolio goes beyond just viewing your portfolio, though. Inside the portfolio, you can do all the incredible money verbs that make DeFi so powerful. You can buy, swap, bridge, and stake your crypto assets with ease. It's like having a powerful battle station for all your DeFi moves right at your fingertips. So if you're looking to do more in Web3 your way, MetaMask Portfolio is the answer. I already know that you have MetaMask wallet, so go check out your MetaMask portfolio. Learn more at metamask.io/portfolio. Arbitrum is accelerating the Web3 landscape with a suite of secure Ethereum scaling solutions. Hundreds of projects have already deployed onto Arbitrum One. With a flourishing DeFi and NFT ecosystem, Arbitrum Nova is quickly becoming a Web3 gaming hub, and social dApps like Reddit are also calling Arbitrum home. And now, Arbitrum Orbit allows you to use Arbitrum's secure scaling technology to build your own Layer 3, giving you access to interoperable, customizable permissions with dedicated throughput. All of these technologies leverage the security and decentralization of Ethereum and provide a builder experience that's intuitive, familiar, and fully EVM compatible. Faster transaction speeds and significantly lower gas fees. Arbitrum empowers you to explore and build without compromise. Visit arbitrum.io, where you can join the community, dive into the developer docs, bridge your assets, and start building your first app on Arbitrum. The law of chains. Optimism drops the law of chains version 0. So what is this law of chains? It's starting off as a document. It's a document kind of like, I don't know, a constitution of sorts that is going to be iterated on in the OP stack world, in the world of Optimism governance. The idea here is the problems that we have are the OP stack is getting forked and deployed new chains like almost every single day, right? We got Base, we got Zora, we got the WorldCoin token chain as well. There's a few others ones as well.
Mantle is an OP stack chain. WorldCoin is deploying on the OP stack.
Yeah, I mentioned it. We mentioned it. People are forking the OP stack. I don't want to, like, putting WorldCoin back in the closet.
Dave wants to forget about them.
The OP stack is getting forked. So now there's all these OP stack standard chains. More chains than what can be managed. So, like, what do you expect users to do? To go to MetaMask drop down and go to, like, okay, here's OP stack chain one, OP stack chain two? No. We want just one. And so this is the law of chains is the first step along that process. So from the law, this is what I wrote in the tweet, from the law of chains spawns the OP super chain. This is where we're going. And so because of every single new OP stack chain is a different chain, we still want them to behave like one chain. But since adding new OP stack chains to the world is completely free, completely open, completely permissionless. How do we actually determine what is in the superchain versus out of the superchain? Because, you know, any since anyone can fork the OP stack and spin up a new chain, that chain could be a rug. That chain could be, you know, an exploit. That could be a bad chain. So if we want all of these OP stack chains to converge into the super chain, they all need to pass a certain threshold of quality assurances. And this is what the law of chains puts forth. It's you must be this good or higher to be included into the super chain. And so this is the document that the OP community is working on to determine what is that line, what is that threshold for inclusion. And after that, we can start to have collective bargaining power for all the OP stack chains that are in the super chain. And so what does that mean? The cost to spin up a new Etherscan, like Optimism Etherscan, RBScan, PolyScan, or, you know, talking to Infura or Alchemy. Those are deals that have to be inked. That has labor costs. But when all of these OP stack chains are formed under the same standard with a very strong level of quality assurances, all of a sudden, all of this can cohere into one single collective of chains. And so Etherscan and all these people can start to treat these chains as equivalent because they are. And so this is what the law of chains has started to kick off.
Is it basically so, like, but what is idea, it though, David? Is it like a document that, is it like a...
It's a proposal of standards.
It's a proposal of
standards. It's a document that is proposing standards.
Okay. And then basically these are the standards for joining like the confederacy of all of these chains. And if you meet this threshold, then you can be adopted into this confederacy of chains. If there's some sort of like formal body that votes and is like, yeah, this chain's good, that chain's bad, we're letting this one in, we're booting the other chain, or are we not there yet? The first step is just to establish.
I believe that is a part of the process that is being proposed. That is what needs to be figured out.
Well, very interesting. There's some takes about this too, including from Alex from the ZK Sync. What did he say?
Yeah, I thought this was pretty funny. So Alex is on team ZK stack. So this is in the layer two wars. This is a layer two wars tweet. And so he's going TLDR, OP stack, many chains, one choice, single shared sequencer, centralized MEV distribution, protected by laws and governance. And then he goes ZK stack, many chains, many choices, pick your own sequencer, handle MEV your way, protected by math and code. We are not the same. He follows through. But then his next tweet kind of walks himself back a little bit and goes, I must add, although my preference for individualism and sovereignty is obvious, I admire Optimism's brilliant work on governance and public goods funding mechanism designs. We all learn by winning from each other, making Ethereum layer two ecosystems richer and stronger. So some spicy takes out of Alex, out of this whole like law of change thing. I will say, got to give credit to where credit's due. Optimism has all the chains. Like they've got Base. They've got Mantle, they've got WorldCoin, if you care about that, but I'm putting that one back in the closet. They've got Zora, which is the Tezos, like the media network, but now on Ethereum. And so like you got it. And so when we were looking at the stats earlier of like Optimism beating trumping Arbitrum in transactions, that's just mainnet. That's not, what about all the other chains? What happens when all of those chains form into the super chain? That I think is really cool. We're going to do a podcast with Jesse and Ben on this whole concept because the negotiation between Coinbase and the OP collective as to help, what does that relationship look like, has carved out like room for this whole law of change thing. So this is a big learning moment for everyone.
Well, since you're being the optimistic roll-up bull, allow me to be the kind of the ZK roll-up bull for a second. What I would say is this is just the first inning though, David. And like we got a lot more innings, and it's actually a miracle that ZK roll-up technology has kind of come to market so quickly. And I do think that there's something to this last point that Alex said, which is protected by math and code rather than laws and governance. It's basically like ZK cryptography, it's magic moon math, right? And you could do things with ZK that you can't do with fraud proofs.
You know what you can do with ZK, Ryan? You can turn an optimistic chain into a ZK chain.
Let the games begin. I think we'll have to see how it plays out. And again, check layer two beat for the progress here, but this is just the first inning.
And disclosures, Ryan and I love the OP stack and the ZK stack so much. We are advisors to both Optimism and ZK Sync, the producers of both the OP stack and ZK stacks. Really, the common denominator is we just love stacks. I love stacks. I love them. I think they're so great.
Love decentralization. Speaking of stacks, David, Starknet. still building in the background. This is, of course, a ZK-centric ecosystem as well. They announced last week that they are incredibly excited to introduce Starknet app chains. They say Starknet is
emerging. They're announcing a stack. That's what they're, it's their stack. Yes. Now they have a stack.
Yes. This is an app chain stack as well. So this is another fantastic team who's building the Starknet stack in the ecosystem. And it's interesting to see this. This came about in our Polygon conversation earlier this week with the founders of Polygon. It's just like there's some convergence in layer twos to like the stack-based model where you have your kind of general purpose EVM type of chain, and then you have app chains, and you're creating like a full stack for chain developers to deploy to your ecosystem. And all of the ecosystems are competing against one another. They're also working together in some weird ways against other side chains and alternatives. It's it's a very interesting time to be in crypto on the infrastructure side, I'd say.
I love it. I love it so much. It's like, finally, it took 2 years more than I thought it'd take to get to this point, but finally, here we are. Uri Kolodny of Starkware, he will also be at Permissionless. So if you are interested in the Starkware stack, he'll be at Permissionless.
David, I got to ask you, because all of the tweets we've been reading out this week, I don't even know if they're tweets any longer, because this is called...
Okay, we're doing this?
Yes, right, we're doing this. Elon Musk has just transformed Twitter into X, the everything app. All right, see the big X on the top left? No longer Twitter. This whole thing is called X. It's a big rebrand, and this is part of his plan to make, I guess, Twitter, now X, into some kind of super app. What's your take on this so far, David?
It's worth noting that X.com was Elon's first startup that actually made him his first money. I'm really fuzzy on the details, but like he's had X.com for a long time. That was like it's something to do with PayPal. It was like one of his first startups. It was going to be an online bank, actually. It's like a startup, and it was going to be the X Bank. And so this is not... Elon's first flirtation with this whole X thing. So he's like pulling this out from downtown, like out of his pocket that he's, you know, just being kept up his sleeve. And now Twitter is now X. There's so many things to talk about it. I don't even know if we have enough time to go into it, but it's like, man, they're called tweets. The bird is blue. It's a blue bird. Everyone knows it. It's Twitter. It's Facebook. It's Instagram. And all of that is just completely thrown down the trash. Like brands take forever to get built. And now we have this extremely basic X thing. They're called Zeets, X-E-E-T-S. We're supposed to be Zeeting.
Really?
Now we had a Spaces with Taylor Monahan. And are they X Spaces now? Because that sounds dirty. I don't want to be in an X space with anyone on Twitter. Or excuse me, on X.com. Like, okay, so this my take about when Elon first bought Twitter was it's probably going to break and get clunky. And then if he can do it, it'll get better from there.
Yeah.
So, but it has gotten so much worse than I've ever thought possible. And he's trying to rotate it into a super app. Like, you're really testing my conviction, Elon. Like, I'm not enjoying this. Right?
Yeah, I mean, he's saying some pretty bold things. Like, if done right, X would become half of the global financial system, right? Wow.
What do you mean he's saying pretty bold things? He only says bold things.
I mean, this
Elon
is like,
only says bold things.
Is he going to incorporate crypto? What's that going to look like in the future? I just got to be honest on the branding of this. You look at kind of the left versus the right, and this was someone's take. Going to be honest, this new widget design looks like an app for membership only human trafficking gentlemen's club headquartered in Budapest. I mean,
my phone is still Twitter. It's still a blue bird for me. Is yours an X now?
I don't think it's turned into an X, but just the top left
on your phone,
here. I don't know. I haven't looked at that, but like the top.
So many of these things don't make sense now because now we have the Twitter blue. If you have that circle tweet button, it's a feather.
Yeah.
Elon.
Yeah. I don't know.
Stop messing with my life.
There's a broader, I think, conversation here, which is this may be a rumor. I'm not sure what to make of this, David, but this tweet says, yesterday, the owner of Twitter handle @X tried to sell it for $1 million. And minutes ago, Twitter or X, Elon, took it away from him and transferred the old @Twitter account to it. And the owner received $0. This could be some speculation here. But the point is, like, your handle...
You don't know.
On Twitter, your handle on X, like, you don't own.
Is Elon's.
It's not a
domain name.
It's not... It's so one thing I guess I'll say is... maybe I'll give credit to Elon in this. I think Twitter has always towed the line of trying to be like a public square and like a public good and an open protocol, but like that being a facade and not really doing it well. You know, right. It's just like, well, if it's an open protocol,
it was a private company trying to produce a public square and they did a pretty good job of it, but it was still a private company at the end of the day.
Then it started to like fracture, right? Like, well, do you censor a tweet or not? Well, if it's a public good, you don't, right. But if it's a private company, right. Then you do. Elon has completely ripped the mask off of that. This is very clearly a private company. This is Elon's app. Yeah. When I tweet, I am tweeting on X, Elon's private property. I know my position in this ecosystem. I am a serf for like Lord Elon, basically. And so I know that at least, and I can choose whether I want to continue to invest in this or not. I think a lot of people will choose to pursue more open, real public alternatives. And maybe that's where Web3 and crypto finally starts to take off. But at least with Elon, we kind of know where we stand. This is a private company and a private application. And as a user, you can either use it or not, but you don't necessarily have rights on this platform. You don't have any assets that you own.
Yeah. Yeah. I want this story to hurry up and finish. Like, can we get to the super app or can we go back to Twitter? But this like limbo, being here.
This is a feel awkward stage. Yeah. Speaking of awkward, I don't know if you call this awkward or progress here. RFK Jr. just confirmed that he purchased 14 Bitcoin, David. So he's now joined the club 14? Officially. That's $415,000 worth of Bitcoin. $414,000. So he's officially part of the Church of Bitcoin. He is a holder at this point in time. I don't know if he's doing that for investment purposes.
Knowing the little bit I know about RFK, he fits right in.
Well, take that as you will, RFK. David.
Ryan, do you remember my first job in crypto?
Didn't you work for like some shady ICOs or something? No?
No, even worse, dude. It was an ICO advisory agency.
Wow. David the scammer?
I mean, only in hindsight. In the moment, I thought I was leading a revolution. I was a mere community manager. I would write blogs.
Fair.
Anyways, I worked for this company called New Alchemy, which was a big number of ICOs, Aon Network, like AION, if you remember that, 2017.
Interoperability. I remember that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then everything ground to a halt when we realized that all these ICOs that we're doing are securities. And that's actually where I got my securities training. My knowledge base. Anyways, the owner of New Alchemy is this guy, Peter Vesnes. He was my first ever crypto boss. And so after that company blew up, he's been in Bitcoin since forever. He's now in like a family office VC firm, Capital Six, and him and Matthew Rosnack, which is another name I have not heard of a really long time. Another project that we did was called Metronome, which I think
I remember Metronome.
Yeah, I remember Metronome. Metronome was cool. Anyways, that investor group has offered $125 million for CoinDesk, the news agency, which we frequently use here on the weekly roll-up. And so my old boss and a few other of his investor friends have offered $125 million for CoinDesk. So I don't know if this is going to go through, but everything sounds like it will. CoinDesk.
An important detail there of why is CoinDesk selling? It's because parent company DCG has been in some financial trouble recently. And so
they need to liquidate. Yeah, they need it. They have like $1 billion hole. So they've got over $1 billion hole. So they've got like, about $1 billion left to fill.
Got some bills to pay.
Too much.
Yeah. So CoinDesk might be a casualty of that.
Hey, 125 million is 125 million.
There we go. David.
So congrats to everyone at CoinDesk. You now work for my old boss.
So does that mean they work for you in any way or is no relation?
No, it does not mean that. That's not how that works.
Synthetics is releasing something big, something new. David, what's Cain Warwick up to these days?
Yeah. So Cain Warwick is releasing Infinex as a layer on top of Synthetics to help go toe to toe with centralized platforms, centralized exchanges. And so this is just kind of a more user-friendly layer on top of Synthetics. And so it is just a normal registration, like a centralized exchange, username, email, password, and it will assign you a unique margin account for every user. No new token. So it removes all the steps for participating on Synthetics, because Synthetics now is on Optimism, so you don't have to bridge there anymore. You don't have to require SUSD. You don't need to sign every action. It's probably going to look and feel a lot like Coinbase or any other centralized exchange, but you do have an Ethereum address. And so this is going to release alongside Synthetics V3 later this year. Anyone can join. And so beta testing is currently in process.
That's great. You know why I think partially what screwed us over in 2022 mm-hmm. is BlockFi, Celsius, all of these centralized CeFi, like they were so easy to use. It was just, mm-hmm. the app just worked. Yep. And DeFi really hasn't had that. So if we can smooth out the user experience, then I think we can really grow this cycle.
One theme I've been noticing, Ryan, Compound, the Comp token recently has a really strong performance. Uniswap is releasing Uniswap X, even though I don't think the token price is doing all that crazy of things. Synthetics volume is painting numbers, bro. $500 million in a single day from Quenta, which is basically another Synthetics like plugin. So if you scroll down, you see that little chart. Synthetics has never been used more than it has now. Wow. Like, look at those numbers. That's the most it's ever been used since
OG DeFi is making a comeback.
OG DeFi is well, yeah, it's like, turns out that, remember the whole DeFi 2.0 mania phase? That was actually the top. Yeah, it turns out, no, it's DeFi 1.0, man.
DeFi 1.0 that's upgrading to 2.0 in the background quietly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Something that is actually new into the DeFi world, Superfluid has introduced Superfluid subscriptions. So Superfluid is a streaming payments startup. So if you would like to trickle pennies and microtransactions over time, Superfluid is that. They are releasing Superfluid subscriptions. So you can manage access to software, APIs, content, community, however you want to see fit. So that's something that's been released. It's been a long talked about use case in crypto, theoretical use case.
Forever.
Streaming money. No, and it has been used in gaming, I think. It's gotten some traction, but I haven't personally seen a use case for it that has impacted my life. But I did throw Superfluid over to our web developer, Ryan, and say like, hey, does this work? Can you slap this into bankless.com?
Yeah.
And so he's investigating that. Disclaimer, I am an investor in Superfluid. Ryan is not, because he forgot to sign the document.
Yeah, and I lost that email. I didn't sign those papers. Oh, well.
Oh, sorry about that one, bro.
Bullish on the use case.
Yeah, me too.
You know what? This is also kind of a bullish use case, I think, for Chainlink. They just launched their cross-chain interoperability protocol. CCIP is what this stands for. David, this reminds me a lot of what Layer Zero is doing, if you're familiar with that.
Layer Zero, but Chainlink flavored this time.
Okay, well, for those that aren't familiar with Layer Zero and mm-hmm. with what Chainlink is doing here, can you kind of describe what this CCIP protocol, what the CCIP features is actually adding?
Yeah, so the first step to transferring tokens across chains is transferring messages across chain, because actually tokens and data, they're all the same thing. And so this starts there, but it's basically a cross-chain messaging platform. Since Chainlink has the security of the link token being staked, and it has some amount of assurances about passing messages. So you start there, and then you can build up further and further use cases. And so cross-chain collateral deposits, cross-chain NFTs, cross-chain gaming, cross-chain data storage and computation.
It's like a super bridge.
Yeah, it's like a super bridge. Yeah, mesh network bridge thing.
But it's more than that, because you can build on top of it, right? If you want to build an app that
you can, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, you know, supports multiple chains underneath, like Avalanche mm-hmm. and you know, other EVM chains, Layer 2 mm-hmm. and Ethereum, then you can build that on top of this new protocol in Chainlink. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I believe so. That's right. I have not looked too deeply into this because A, I don't really like bridges to begin with. And B, the Chainlink army is always up in my mentions and it leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, at the same time, Chainlink has always had great tech, right? They support a lot of the oracles in this space. So they're doing some good things. Flashbots has become a unicorn after a $60 million raise. So unicorn status is $1 billion or above. That is Flashbots, mm-hmm. the MEV platform. There's a lot of conversation about the development of what they're calling Suave, which is a new MEV chain. It's a marketplace for mm-hmm. block builders and searchers and the whole kind of block
building. All the participants of how a block becomes a block, it's like a marketplace. It's a chain marketplace for them.
I feel like we need a series of episodes on what's going on in the block builder supply chain space to like fully unpack this and understand it. But it seems like private investors are understanding it, willing to upgrade. But in the meantime, I think there's going to be a lot of MEV folks, including Hasu, at Permissionless. That conference will be another nice check-in. Mm-hmm. So another reminder to grab your
Permissionless ticket. There's a theme of this week.
If you haven't. The theme is accumulate and grab a permissionless ticket. David, we got a lot more to talk about, though. What's coming up next?
Yeah, questions from the nation. We got an Eigenlayer question. They seem to be pretty frequent this week. Then we got a takes of the week. I got a take from Mike Ipatillo. We'll talk about bridges there. And then I wrote an article, and so there's five takes in there that I'm going to burn through really quickly. And then, of course, what Ryan and I are bullish on. And we got a hot meme. It's very hot. It's very hot. You want to stick around for that. So all of that and more, but first a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make the show possible. Mantle, formerly known as BitDAO, is the first DAO-led Web3 ecosystem, all built on top of Mantle's first core product, the Mantle Network, a brand new high-performance Ethereum Layer 2 built using the OP stack, but uses Eigenlayer's data availability solution instead of the expensive Ethereum Layer 1. Not only does this reduce Mantle Network's gas fees by 80%, but it also reduces gas fee volatility, providing a more stable foundation for Mantle's applications. The Mantle Treasury is one of the biggest DAO-owned treasuries, which is seeding an ecosystem of projects from all around the Web3 space for Mantle. Mantle already has sub-communities from around Web3 onboarded, like Game7 for Web3 gaming, and Bybit for TVL and liquidity and on-ramps. So if you want to build on the Mantle network, Mantle is offering a grants program that provides milestone-based funding to promising projects that help expand, secure, and decentralize Mantle. If you want to get started working with the first DAO-led Layer 2 ecosystem, check out Mantle at mantle.xyz and follow them on Twitter at 0xmantle. Hiring people worldwide, paying them in crypto, providing them access to benefits, it all's so complex. But it doesn't have to be. Complying with labor laws, payroll rules, tax obligations, and crypto regulations in every country that you employ someone is difficult, time-consuming, manual, and costly. And it's drawing more and more attention from regulators and governments. But there is good news. Toku is here. Toku is the first employment and compensation platform for the crypto industry that makes this easy. Toku helps you hire employees or contractors and pay them in fiat or crypto legally, compliantly, and with all the taxes handled in over 100 different jurisdictions. So whether you're an early stage company with just a team of two, or you're an enterprise with 200, Toku has a solution that meets your needs. Toku is already working with the leading companies in the space, Protocol Labs, Hedera, Gitcoin, and many more. So transform your employment and token payroll operations with Toku. You can reach out to Toku at toku.com/bankless or click the link in the show notes.
Question of the week coming from Onium.eth. The question is this. It seems to me that Eigenlayer is positioning Ethereum as a kind of security reserve for other blockchains, much like how the US dollar serves as a reserve currency, providing economic security globally. By enabling Ethereum's security to cross borders into other layer ones, Eigenlayer appears to be enhancing the overall security of the blockchain ecosystem. The question is this. Could you delve into this analogy and discuss the implications of this security globalization? I like that term. How could this impact the future of Ethereum and other blockchains? This idea of security globalization and Eigenlayer, what's your take here?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You can definitely tell Onium.eth, who asked that question, thanks Onium, is like, that's a Bankless vibe question, putting these things into like geopolitical country nation state terms. So the United States passport, probably the most valuable passport in the world. That's probably a fair take. You can get into the most countries with a United States passport. Like you can just walk across almost anywhere and everyone's like, oh, well, welcome to our country. I think what they're getting at is that Ether does the same thing for all of the restaking networks. So all these restaking networks is like, oh, you're Ether, please welcome and, you know, sit yourself down and also consider providing us some services while you're here. It's pretty, pretty similar, I'd say. Why did Eigenlayer choose Ether? Why didn't it choose Bitcoin? Why didn't it choose Solana? Well, it couldn't choose Bitcoin because Bitcoin's not proof of stake and it's not a smart contract. Why did it choose Ether over Solana? Well, because Ether has all the economic bandwidth. It has all the value. If you're going to have a system where you need to have your collateral, to be trusted, you need to post collateral. You need to post the best collateral possible on the network that has all of the networks. And so that is just Ethereum. And so this is part of the story of capital begets capital begets capital. And so you just are, the most number of doors are open to you. And so your security, your collateral can transcend across boundaries because those boundaries desire your capital the most. And I think there's pretty strong parallels with what Onium is saying here. Hopefully that was unpacking that analogy enough to their satisfaction.
Yeah, the only thing I would add to that is like the direct answer to the question to me is how does this impact the future of Ethereum in the context of reserve currency status? Mm. My take is it cements Ether
as the reserve currency
of not just Ethereum, but of like crypto and all of the other blockchains. Right. In the same way that the dollar has been reinforced through the US's military security and economic prowess as the reserve currency of the world. Like the liquidity and the network effect that you were just talking about, like the capital begets capital, security begets security sort of network effect, that just compounds if EigenLayer is successful. Bigly. Right? Because the
imagine there being like 10, 15, 20 tokens on CoinGecko and they're layer one tokens or they're network tokens and they're secured by Ethereum.
Yeah. I mean, it is just, it is probably the single most bullish thing if this takes off for either the asset since, I don't know, staking. Ultrasound Money, since EIP 1559. Like, it's absolutely massive, I think, in its ability to build network effect. All right, let's go to some takes of the week, David.
Coming in with takes of the week, we only have two. This is Mike from Blockworks, and this is a post-ECC take. He goes, if there's one thing I learned from Paris, it's that market makers are bridges now. And this is a conversation that's slowly been brewing and I think really has crescendoed with Uniswap X. Uniswap X, also CalSwap, I think also perhaps Swav itself. These are all platforms that allow for bridges to be completely abstracted and also like kind of largely routed around. It's really bridge
almost
minimalism.
Obsoleted, right?
Yeah, you still need them, but you need them in the minimal fashion.
You need them a lot less.
Yeah, and so why is that true? It's because market makers, what does it mean? Like, why are market makers bridges now? Say, Ryan, you have Ether on the Ethereum layer one, and you would like to have DAI on the Optimism layer two. Instead of making a trade on Uniswap and then hopping over a bridge, what you can do is you can just post a transaction, not even submit a transaction to Ethereum, but broadcast a transaction that says to any market maker, hey, I have this much Ether, give me as much DAI as possible on the chain that I want it to be on.
Like, I just broadcast my intent. I don't actually have to commit to the transaction.
Yeah. Right. Uh-huh. And then a market maker is like, well, I'll take that deal. And maybe a different market maker is like, well, I'll take that deal too, but I'll do it better. And all of a sudden the free market fulfills your order and puts your assets in that you want and the place that you want. And you never had to touch a bridge. And like the bridge security is like minimized. And so this is kind of a meta that has been unfolding. It's like bridges are kind of just being routed around.
Yeah. This is another series of bankless episodes, honestly, to get into this whole world of intents rather than transactions. I feel like we need some content on this to fully unpack and understand it. But yeah that is an emerging meta here. David, what are some other things you learned from ETHCC? I saw you put a post out in the Bankless newsletter this week. So what were some of your key takeaways?
So I actually took some time and wrote out an article about my big takeaways from ECC. It's about 2,500 words and I'm going to read it. Let's go. I'm kidding. I'll just read the headlines. The big ones are protocols are becoming commodities. My big TLDR here is that by the time the next bull market comes around, the cost of Web3 compute, trustless computation, data, whatever we need to do Web3
drops
things,
to zero.
We'll have approached its theoretical minimum. Like that's one of my big takeaways. And you can explain my reasoning and all the tidbits of data that I have about that. So that's the first one. Second one, protocol convergence and verticalization. So Aave just launched the Go stablecoin. MakerDAO just launched Sparks, which is an Aave type money market. Frax has already had both of these things and they also have their own internal LSD. So these things are all starting to A, become verticalized and B, converge in their same design patterns. Convergence.
That's where I was going next. Stacks,
it's all the stacks. Right? We have all the stacks. And so those are all converging on the same design patterns. Then you have Uniswap X becoming a vertical on top of Uniswap. So there's a bunch of convergence and verticalization going on. So that was my next big one. But then after that, it's like, okay, we have protocols that are maximally cheap. We have DeFi apps that are becoming maximally like as vertical and wide as possible. It's now time to think of the consumer. And I don't only just mean more apps to buy more block space, but can we build front ends like Infinex, like what Kane is doing at Synthetix? Can we build front ends? Can we build apps? Can we start doubling, tripling, quadrupling down on building consumer level stuff that is built for people that have never touched a private key? That's my call to action on there. And then my last big takeaway is the Modular Summit versus ETHCC. There's two different conferences here. Some of just like the different dispositions of who you find where. But my big takeaway from Modular Summit is like that whole community, which is, it's like the Celestia, Espresso, the layer twos, the EigenLayer, that side of crypto is just racing out into the frontier. They are developing and discovering things so quickly. They are the actual frontier of thought, I'd say. That's my takeaway there. And then just as a conclusion, if you haven't caught the theme of this episode yet, next up is permissionless. So that's going to be where the next Bankless meetup is. The Bankless party is going to be like 200 plus people for all of our citizens and friends and everyone we want to party with.
That's awesome, man. Those are some good takeaways. Each of those could be episodes as well. I feel like we need to dive into these topics
some
more.
This is true.
What are you bullish on this week, man?
Right behind me, like I said, is the Matterhorn. And I don't climb it tomorrow. We climb a training mountain tomorrow. But then we come back and rest. And then on Sunday, I climb it. So
it's just like a giant spike.
My three... Yeah, it is a giant spike. I'm actually kind of bummed that that cloud is there, but it's that cloud doesn't go away.
This is your picture. You take this.
That's right outside of where I am right now.
Wow. Yeah, so how do you actually get there?
There's no car. Actually, I'm in a city with zero cars. We had to ditch the car, park the car, take a train in, and then the Airbnb that we have is like 20 minutes away. So we took this like a little electric taxi. It was kind of cool. Really cool town. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So that's what I'm bullish on. I'm bullish on climbing the Matterhorn and hopefully successfully.
Are you going to plant a big Bankless flag up there at the top when you get there, David?
Of course. I've never missed such an opportunity.
Awesome.
All right, Ryan, what are you bullish on?
You know what? Despite this week and all of kind of the pushback and the anger about WorldCoin, I'm not going to say I'm bullish on WorldCoin because I'm not, but I am bullish on digital proof of personhood. I just feel like crypto sometimes underestimates how much we're going to need this. Right? There's this like huge meta problem that's hitting us right in the face right now, which is like, we don't know who the bots are and who the people are on the internet. It's like on Twitter, I don't know, those 500 retweets, is how many of those are bots and how many of those are people, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that what tends to happen over time is if the bots have the level of speech that humans do on the internet, and we can't tell human from bot, then it starts to fracture society. Like democracies run on trust. Democracy is kind of a conversation between all of its citizens. And if you can get Sybil attacked by a whole bunch of bots, if your democracy can be Sybil attacked in that way and destroy the fabric of trust, destroy the conversation, then you could destroy democracy. I feel very strongly that like human beings should have freedom of speech on the internet, but I don't think that extends to bots. And so if we can't tell who the bots and who the humans are, we got a real problem. And the status quo, the only way we know how to do that right now is either you have kind of like the tech companies partner with the government to do some sort of like state ID, driver's license, passport,
that sounds bad.
AML, KYC
I don't
thing.
Like that.
That's what we're headed. That's like the default, right? And so that's bad for a lot of reasons, but I guess it's something. And I guess what I'm bullish on, though, is that we can get to a place, crypto can play a huge role, maybe the fundamental role, in creating this stateless identity. And in order for a stateless identity, proof of personhood online to work, it needs to be decentralized, it needs to be permissionless, it needs to be private, it needs to be uncensorable. Those are the things that crypto is really good at. If this type of thing doesn't come from crypto, where's it going to come from? No one else is building this. Silicon Valley is not building this. The tech companies aren't building this. So I've always felt like this with crypto, which is like act one is separation of money and state. Act two is separation of identity and state, right? Like we need both of those abilities if we're going to make it through the potential dystopian authoritarian scenarios that, you know, the 21st century is going to throw at us. So I don't know how this will look. I don't know what kind of the best solutions are, whether it's kind of a, you know, social graph based solution or something else, whether biometrics plays a role in it or not. But I would encourage us with all of the kind of the pushback on WorldCoin, and there are a lot of good reasons for pushback to be had. Let's not lose sight of this use case of decentralized proof of personhood. I think we're going to need this one. And I think crypto has a big role to play. So, you know, here's a podcaster telling all the devs to go build something cool, but like, we got to go build something cool, guys.
Right.
Anyway, that's my take.
Great take. Great take.
You want to get to the meme of the week? I've been waiting for this one. An old Gary Gensler meme that sort of fits in. David, did you see?
We haven't talked about this yet. Yeah.
Okay, so this was like UFO week. I don't know if you caught this. Like somebody in front of Congress.
I have just caught the tail of this.
All right.
Yeah, I'm not tapped in. This is Gary Gensler, picture of Gary Gensler, our favorite. And he goes, all of these UFOs, they're going to need to come in and register. You're going to have to come and register. We're going to need you guys to come in.
There we go.
Let's come into my office.
We'll end it there. I have no take on UFOs at this point. As another thing, I'm just trying to.
I mean, if these UFOs can just abduct Gary Gensler, that sounds like the more likely outcome.
All right, I'm not going to touch that one. Risks and disclaimers. Got to let you know at the end of every Bankless episode, of course, none of this has been financial advice. It's not alien advice. Nothing of the sort. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.